You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
The Hong Kong Autonomy Act, which I signed this afternoon, passed unanimously through Congress. This law gives my administration powerful new tools to hold responsible the individuals and the entities involved in extinguishing Hong Kong's freedom.
A lot of people will be leaving Hong Kong, I suspect. And we're going to do a lot more business because of it, because we just lost one
competitor. Today, I also signed an executive order ending U.S. preferential treatment for Hong Kong.
That's U.S. President Donald Trump announcing the Hong Kong Autonomy Act in July. It was legislation passed by both houses of the U.S. Congress and signed off by Donald Trump. And it came as a result of rising tensions between the U.S. and China after China introduced a national security law for Hong Kong in June. Donald Trump hasn't said all that much about Hong Kong over the past year. But this time, he let everybody know what he thought about Hong Kong.
We gave them a lot of business by doing what we did. We gave them things that nobody else had the right to do. And that gave them a big edge over other markets. And because of that edge, they've done really historic business, tremendous business, far bigger than anybody would have thought years ago when we did this gift. It was really a gift to freedom.
But what does that really mean? What does it mean for the multi-billion dollar finance sector here in Hong Kong? What does it mean for the 7 million people who live here in Hong Kong? Welcome to Inside China. My name is Mimi Lau.
And my name is Kinling Lo. The U.S. brought in the Hong Kong Autonomy Act in response to the national security law written by the central government in Beijing. The national security law comprises six chapters with 66 articles, and it bans any act considered to be secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with a foreign country or external elements that endanger national security. The law is also supposed to cover the whole world, not just Hong Kong. And the maximum penalty for each crime is life imprisonment, although the suggested sentence for some minor offenses is less than 3 years jail. In May, both houses of the U.S. Congress voted unanimously in support of the Hong Kong Autonomy Act. And after Donald Trump signed the act into law, he made a speech from the Rose Garden, where he announced he now had
powerful new tools to hold responsible the individuals and the entities involved in extinguishing Hong Kong's freedom.
Those tools include ending Hong Kong's preferential trade treatment and sanctions against foreign individuals and banks for contributing to the erosion of Hong Kong's autonomy. To unpack what this means for Hong Kong, let's start with ending Hong Kong's preferential trade treatment and what that means. Let's bring back someone you've heard on this podcast before.
Hi, nice to be back on the Inside China podcast, guys.
Finbar Birmingham works on the political economy desk for the South China Morning Post, but he is also the presenter of the US-China Trade War podcast. He's been covering the trade war since it began, so we thought he was the best person to ask what Donald Trump meant when he said the U.S. was giving billions to Hong Kong.
Hundreds of billions of dollars a year from our country.
So what does he mean?
That's not abundantly clear what he was referring to. He was saying that the U.S. gives Hong Kong billions of dollars every year, which is not really true. The U.S. doesn't hand over any cash to Hong Kong, as far as I'm aware. What he may have been referring to was Hong Kong's special treatment and its special trading status, which is recognized by the United States and by other countries around the world. Hong Kong is a WTO, World Trade Organization, member in its own right, as part of the One Country, Two Systems Agreement, the Basic Law, and the handover agreement with Britain. Hong Kong has a separate customs jurisdiction, it has a separate trade policy, and in that regard, it is essentially a separate trading entity. It means that it doesn't have to be treated in the same way as China. So the US trade war tariffs, for example, that were levied on China since 2018 don't apply to Hong Kong. Hong Kong has a different taxation system. It has a different, it has the rule of law. So a lot of US companies set up their bases in Hong Kong in order to transact and do business with China and with the rest of Asia. So there is a lot of US money, a lot of American money in Hong Kong. The Hong Kong dollar is pegged to the United States dollar. There's a close trading relationship between Hong Kong and the United States, as there is with Hong Kong and the rest of the Western world, given its status as the gateway to China. But nobody really knows exactly what Trump was referring to when he mentioned that Hong Kong gets billions of dollars in handouts from the United States.
There was a lot of talk of a change to Hong Kong's trading status. What did that mean as well?
Well, the Hong Kong Autonomy Act was signed in tandem with the an executive order on the normalization of Hong Kong's trading status. Essentially, what this does in the long term, we see, is removing this special trading status that I just mentioned. So it strips away the separate recognition of Hong Kong as an independent entity in trading terms from China. What we expect to see over time is that Hong Kong will be treated in the same way as China in American eyes, and in the eyes of the White House and of the rest of the US government. This is something which you've already started to see happen. Hong Kong previously was able to gain access to sensitive technology, which entities in China are essentially banned from buying.
And so what exactly is sensitive technology?
There's a broad definition of this sensitive technology. It's these so-called dual-use goods, which can have both military and civilian applications and which are highly restricted whenever Beijing and Chinese companies wants to buy them. These could be, you know, chips or so on that could be used in iPhones as well as used in military-grade appliances. In the future, people expect that the definition of a sensitive technology will be broadened because of the democratization of technology. The widespread use of smart devices, for instance, means that sensitive technology that was previously used in very high-end military appliances may be present in toasters and kettles in the future. But for now, what we think of when we refer to sensitive technology are really high-tech goods that range from sort of advanced ammunition, which is a pretty obvious one, but to really high-tech radar technology and stuff like that.
And what about the massive tariffs the US has for particular Chinese goods? Just over a year ago, Finbar and the team put on a podcast series looking at how tariffs were affecting all kinds of goods being traded between the US, mainland China, and Hong Kong, called Behind the Tariffs. At that time, Hong Kong was separated from this ongoing war of attrition. But now, does it mean US tariffs will apply to things made in Hong Kong?
For now, the tariffs the US applies to Chinese goods do not apply to Hong Kong. However, some people do expect that to change in the future. Early August, the United States announced that it would require Hong Kong goods to be relabeled as made in China. Initially, it was thought that this would mean that tariffs, trade war tariffs, the Section 301 tariffs as they're technically known, would be applied to Hong Kong goods. A couple of days later, the US Customs and Border Protection Agency came out and clarified that this doesn't actually mean tariffs will be applied. So for what it's worth, not very much economically, because there are very few tariffed goods made in Hong Kong anyway. But even so, those tariffs for now don't apply to Hong Kong. However, the symbolism would be strong should the US government in the future decide that they do apply to Hong Kong.
And what about the response from China? Is there any sign of retaliation from Beijing for the US bringing its Hong Kong Autonomy Act?
Well, it's hard to know really what's in retaliation to what these days. The US doesn't really have a Hong Kong that China could remove its special trading status from. But I mean, this has been the serious and perhaps one of the most major escalations and one of the major spikes in the growing US-China rivalry. Beijing has not really commented on whether the WTO case would have legs. I think it's very keen to keep clear of that, but it has issued statements denouncing the US over meddling in its perceived internal domestic affairs over Hong Kong. So it's obviously something that the government in Beijing isn't very happy with either.
That's Finbar Birmingham from the Political Economy Desk and also host of the weekly US-China Trade War Update podcast. So Finbar was talking about the iconic Made in Hong Kong brand, and it made me wonder, what is it that Hong Kong actually makes and exports to the US? Kinling, if I ask you, can you name something that is made and exported from Hong Kong?
Actually, last week, I just visited this really interesting factory in Hong Kong. It's quite small. It's just one floor. There are only a dozen of staff workers there, and they're making these really cool retro vintage flip clocks. I don't know if you've seen them, but they were really popular. They're not even electronic, and they're made for sale in the US. The factory has actually started working on these flip clocks back in the 1950s and 60s, when Hong Kong was really famous for manufacturing electronics and garments and plastic goods. So there's this one little interesting factory that's still making them inside Hong Kong and still selling them to the US. Also, I remember back in the days when I was a student in the UK. So when I was away from home, I really miss like this taste, the Hong Kong taste from home. So I went to this Chinatown and looked for a very specific brand of soy sauce because that's what home tasted to me. And I guess the other thing is the Hong Kong protest tactics. Well, but that's not really a product.
That's more like a political and cultural export. So how about actual products? Every time we read about the things that Hong Kong exports, there is a generic list which says something like electrical machinery, garments, and plastic injection machines. We need someone to explain what this actually means.
Okay, this is Louis Chen of HKDDC Research. My job is to do research regarding markets in the Americas and also in Europe.
Louis Chen is a research economist. His job is to find out exactly what Hong Kong makes and sells overseas. So, apart from a hipster retro clock and some legendary brands of soy sauce and oyster sauce, what does Hong Kong make?
So, overall, Hong Kong's exports are very concentrated in the electronic industry. So, more than 50% or close to 60-something percent of Hong Kong's exports are electronics or electronics-related products. So this has been a pattern since many years because of the legacy that there are quite a large number of electronics and electrical appliances manufacturing in Hong Kong many years ago. And many of them still maintain some trading business here in Hong Kong. And most of these exports are re-exports, meaning that they are not necessarily being made here in Hong Kong, but they are transshipped or they are re-exported from Hong Kong because of the clustering of the trading community of those industry in Hong Kong.
So what happened to this iconic Made in Hong Kong brand? In the 1980s, it was everywhere, but now not so much?
I think that time was already 20, 30 years ago. So since then, and especially when mainland China opens up in the late 70s or early 80s, then many Hong Kong manufacturers, they have relocated their manufacturing across the border. And from across the border over the years, they are also expanding their production out of China to the rest of Asia. And even some of them make use of other locational advantages, for example, in Africa, in Caribbean, or also in Latin America, just to stay close to their final market or to make use of those land or labor cost advantages over different production bases. So this is basically following the trend of globalization happening in the past two, three decades.
People might remember when Hong Kong was famous for making things out of plastic. How big is that industry and how much gets sent to the USA?
If we are talking about products made in Hong Kong, supplying or exporting to the US right away, it accounts for a very insignificant proportion. And most of the products we're talking about, or most of the subject products, are printed circuits, which of course serve as parts and components for the electronics industry, and also some other items like, for example, in terms of consumer products, would be consumer electronics, fashion products, and also other consumer products.
Right, so plastic and garment are nearly non-existent, not very significant portion.
I think we are selling more, especially for garment or for fashion. We're selling the design, not the product itself. So in other words, the products are still made in China or in Vietnam or in other, or in Bangladesh or even in Sri Lanka or in other parts of Asia or other lower labor cost countries. But at the end of the day, the design is from Hong Kong designers, or they're inspired by design here in Hong Kong. So I think this is more resembling the reality rather than they're actually producing the garment here in Hong Kong.
Now you're going to hear from Chad Bray, who is a senior reporter from the South China Morning Post. He's been tracking how the Hong Kong Autonomy Act is a very personal thing for some people in Hong Kong and mainland China. And it all starts with what the United States calls specially designated nationals. So Chad, what is a specially designated national?
So the U.S. government designates individuals, companies, or in some cases countries, as specially designated nationals. Those folks are deemed to have done something the U.S. government doesn't like, usually with human rights, with violating prior sanctions in another situation. And so as part of their diplomatic policy, they designate these individuals so that they can't access the American financial system.
And when someone becomes a specially designated national, what happens next?
We've seen it with Russian oligarchs. We've seen it with Iranian nationals. And in this case, we have Hong Kong and mainland officials who've been designated by the U.S. government. So that means if they have a bank account with an American bank, they're going to find their accounts closed. If they have a credit card that accesses the U.S. system, they're trying to order something from Amazon or another U.S. website, they'll find their transactions blocked. And in cases, other cases too, they'll find that their Hong Kong bank may not want to do business with them because their Hong Kong bank wants to be able to access the U.S. system or at least transfer money into U.S. dollars. And that's one of the issues for these folks. Anytime that you access the American financial system, even in the most brief of ways.
So I guess that means no PayPal, no eBay, no iTunes.
Yeah, no PayPal, no ordering from eBay. Anything that's got a U.S. tie, really the U.S. government is going to try to block that transaction. And what happens is the banks have these list of individuals, whether they be Iranians, whether they be Russians, whether they be, associated with the regime in Cuba. And, you know, it comes up and it says, this person's on this list. You shouldn't transact with them. And then the transactions get blocked.
So U.S. banks have a list of people they are not allowed to serve, and now there are some new Chinese names on that list.
Probably the most prominent name that anyone knows on this list is Carrie Lam. She's the chief executive of Hong Kong. But also you have the current police chief, the former police chief. You have members of the liaison offices for Hong Kong and Macau that are on it. And, you know, it's basically going against individuals that they say have impeded upon the autonomy of Hong Kong and the ability for Hong Kong democracy to continue. And, you know, and this is a U.S. effort to sort of strike back at Beijing and the city after the passage of the national security law here.
Now, there are 7 million people in Hong Kong, and this sounds like a fairly short list. Is there any indication these kinds of sanctions will be used on more people in Hong Kong? Does the border population of Hong Kong have anything to worry about?
Well, for your average person, it's probably not going to do much to them directly. But there, you know, if you're Carrie Lam, you know, you can't buy from an automobile from an American citizen. So if I tried to sell her a car as a U.S. citizen, she couldn't buy it from me. That would be a violation. She's already said that she's had issues with using her credit cards. The current police chief had a mortgage with HSBC. He moved it a few days before the sanctions went into place. And the Hong Kong Police Union, credit union, also heads concerns about the potentially facing a sanctions. They don't have one right now, but they also apparently moved their accounts to Bank of China in anticipation of this. And so what happens is those affected individuals can't do business. Their relatives may find difficulty doing business as banks and others say, we don't really want to be associated with you. And then for Hong Kong as a whole, the government contracts where Carrie Lam is a signer of those contracts, those could potentially run into some issues too. But a lot of that depends upon how the U.S. government interprets those transactions.
Now, speaking about the HSBC Bank, Chad has done some stories looking into how tricky the situation is for major banks wanting to do business both in Hong Kong and the U.S., especially a bank like the HSBC.
Well, I think the issue for HSBC comes down to they want to be able to continue to do business in U.S. dollars and to access the American financial system. So if you want to do that as a bank, you need to abide by U.S. Regulations and U.S. sanctions regulations. At the same time, the national security law prohibits sanctions against Hong Kong, against mainland China. And so, you know, in enacting those sanctions, are you going to be violating local law? You know, HSBC has said that they're looking to the regulator, that they abide by the local law wherever they are. They're certainly walking a very thin line on this. But for HSBC in particular, they have faced pressure from the U.S. and from the U.K., where they are based, on coming out in support of the national security law. They've also faced pressure in the mainland because in abiding by U.S. regulations, they provided information to the U.S. government that was used in an investigation into Huawei Technologies. And that has caused an uproar among mainland media and, you know, internet commenters about HSBC. And they've said perhaps their business in the mainland should be closed as a result. And the biggest thing for HSBC is they've made a huge bet on the future growth of Asia, and particularly in Hong Kong and particularly in China. That's where most of their profit comes from. And that ability to serve those customers is what they need to be able to do. But because the U.S. dollar is so dominant across the planet in terms of trade, in terms of buying, they have to be able to do things in U.S. dollars. And without that, their business is done. I spoke with an analyst recently who said if they were cut off from the U.S. system, it would be an existential threat to the business as a whole.
But it's not just the HSBC, which has to carefully navigate its way between Hong Kong's national security law and the U.S. Hong Kong Autonomy Act, because the American sanctions are able to be enforced on institutions as well.
From a starting point, if you're an American bank, you're just not going to deal with a sanctioned individual. But if you're a foreign bank, there's always a question about, is there an ability to continue and engage in some transactions with these people? You know, can this institution deal with them or not? Well, under the recently passed Hong Kong Autonomy Act, that becomes a much different question. And it's not just HSBC. It's Standard Chartered. It's even, you know, Bank of China. You know, can they engage in transactions with these folks? Because under that law, the U.S. has said any foreign institution that deals with certain individuals that have been deemed to affect the autonomy of Hong Kong, if you engage in significant transactions, you yourself can face sanctions. And that can include being cut off from the U.S. system and having your own executives banned from traveling to the U.S. and your own executives facing sanctions themselves. Now, that's one more step. We're not quite there yet. These individuals haven't been designated under the Hong Kong Autonomy Act yet. That could happen in a few months. If that does, then we could see even further action with the banks trying to figure out how do we deal with this and how do we deal with these individuals.
Now, in this podcast, we've talked about specially designated nationals. So we can't ignore the fact that Chad is one of the very few specially designated Americans in the SEMP office. I mean, his name is Chad to start with, which surely has to be one of the most American names out there.
Also, he's a huge Bruce Springsteen fan.
So, what is it like working in a newspaper based in Hong Kong, reporting on these sanctions from the United States?
Well, you know, I think for me, it's been an interesting challenge because I'm, you know, not only helping interpret what the Americans are saying to my colleagues and to sources in the city, but I'm also turning around and trying to explain what's happening here with a bit of a different eye so that American readers, which we have a fair bit of, can understand what we're, you know, what's happening and have it in a much you know, more precise way, because I think within all the rhetoric, it sometimes gets lost.
Chad Bray is a senior business reporter for SCMP.
That's all we have for you this week on Inside China. And don't forget, you can keep up to date with everything happening in the U.S.-China trade war, as well as what is happening with China's economy, U.S. politics, and a global supply chain on the weekly U.S.-China trade war update podcast.
Thanks for rating us. Thanks for reviewing us. Of course, keep up to date with everything happening inside China and around the world with our 24-hour coverage at scmp.com. My name is Kinling Lo.
My name is Mimi Lau. Thank you so much for listening to Inside China. See you again next week. Bye-bye.
For more podcasts from the South China Morning Post, head to scmp.com, where you can hear more about technology, trade, culture, and society.